I'm just always a bit suspicious of anybody who has a surname which is actually also a first name.
Fascinating.
Fascinating stuff.
I've missed this so much.
Smashing Security, Episode 383, The Godfather Club, and AirTags to the Rescue, with Carol Terrio and Graham Cluley.
Hello, hello, and welcome to Smashing Security, Episode 383. My name's Graham Cluley.
And I'm Carol Terrio. Did you guys miss us?
We've been on our holidays, and we're back. So, Carol, you're not in your usual place.
No, secret mission.
You're on a top secret mission, and might be for a while.
Yep.
Good luck with that mission.
Don't worry, the Yeti is still on side.
That's the important thing.
So let's kick the show off and thank this week's wonderful sponsors, 1Password, Sysdig, and Material. Now, coming up on today's show, Grim, what do you got?
I'm going to be exploring a very 21st century way of catching a thief.
And I'm going to investigate just why is this hottie so into you. Plus, I had a chat with Maya Levine from Sysdig. She's a product manager there. And this is a company on a mission to make every cloud deployment secure and reliable. All this and much more coming up on this episode of Smashing Security.
Now, chums. Nothing much happens in Los Alamos, New Mexico. Carol, are you familiar with Los Alamos? Have you ever been there? Have you ever heard of it?
Heard of it. Know nothing about it. Educate me.
Do you know why you've heard of it?
How?
Because in the 1940s, it's where the US authorities developed and detonated the world's first ever nuclear weapons. That's the only reason why you would have heard of Los Alamos, I suspect.
Is it a fancy suburb now with like loads of really rich houses or no one lives there at all?
Well, it's a fairly sleepy, dull town by all accounts. The biggest news might involve a pair of mismatched socks. Not much goes on there. As far as I know, there aren't any mutant pigeons or anything like that as a result of those nuclear tests way back when. But in the last few days, the headlines in Los Alamos have been shaken by a big story, a saga of thievery. Easy for me to say. And our story begins when there was a fed-up victim, someone who kept on discovering that their mail was being plundered. Their mail was being stolen. So they had a mailbox at the local post office and they were expecting things to be delivered and they didn't show up. And they were really determined to find out who was responsible. And so they hatched a cunning plan. And what they did was they decided to mail themselves something. And what they did was they put in the mail, addressed to themselves, that tiny technological wonder known as the Apple AirTag.
So what do you mean they put... Okay, I don't understand. Okay.
Yeah, so they put an AirTag into an envelope, presumably a padded envelope or something like that, or some sort of package. They dropped it in the post to themselves, so it was going to get sent to their mailbox, and then they could find out where their mail went, if again it was stolen. And
so this is not like one letter going missing, but all their mail.
A lot of their mail was going missing. I guess the interesting looking mail, maybe not the boring mail, maybe not the water bills. No one cares about that.
The ones with a little pretty picture on the outside with a little heart or something.
None of those ones offering new cruises around the Antarctic or, you know, all the junk which you receive. Well, one Monday morning, the trap had been set. And so this woman, she mailed herself this package containing the AirTag, essentially turning her parcel into a homing beacon. So wherever it went, she'd be able to find out where it went, right? And the thieves took the bait. She went to go to a mailbox. There, it's not there. Where's the mail? I should be receiving my mail. Why haven't I received my mail? Is it because the mail service is rubbish or is it because someone has stolen it? Well, the AirTag provided, of course, the real-time coordinates. And it turned out that the stolen package led police deputies. I love this thing about deputies. We don't really have deputies, do we? In the UK.
No. So they're second in command deputies.
Yeah,
is that right?
That's right.
Yeah.
And they went to the coordinates and they arrested a couple of people. They arrested Virginia Francesca Lara and Donald Ashton Terry. Now, there's a couple of things already a bit suspicious about those names. I don't know if you've noticed.
Yeah. They sound completely made up names to me. Yeah, well, I don't even believe they exist.
It could just be a random name generator, couldn't it?
Yeah.
Both of them have surnames which are actually first names. Mm-hmm. I'm just always a bit suspicious of anybody who has a surname which is actually also a first name.
Fascinating.
Fascinating stuff. I'm sure
you've missed this so much. I've missed this so much. Okay, cracking on.
Anyway, early morning, 7:17 in the morning, in fact, on East Sunrise Drive in Santa Maria, a nearby little town. The sun was shining, the birds were chirping, and these two unsuspecting individuals were blissfully unaware that their light-fingered adventures were about to come to a screeching halt because these
Did
deputies...
I write this?
Hmm?
You never use this many adjectives you talk. This is ridiculous.
The squirrels were scrambling around, the beautiful trees. But everything was going to come to a screeching halt because these deputies, they came along, caught them red-handed with the victim's mail. And they also found a treasure trove of other stolen post from over a dozen other victims. So it turns out...
They're just taking them out of mailboxes or what?
Well, what it could be is maybe they've got a link to the post office where the mailbox is. Maybe they've been able to access it that way. It's a little bit unclear as to whether the mailbox is actually at the home of the person who planted the AirTag or whether it is at the post office. It's unclear what kind of mailbox we're talking about.
Okay, so they're just stealing. We don't know how they steal it. They steal all this mail from everybody. And what are they looking for?
Allegedly.
Allegedly.
Well, what they're after probably is, I'm sure we all remember the story about my lost Amazon delivery of the iPhone. So high-value items are being put in the post all the time these days. These are the days of online e-commerce. When you're buying all your technology, you're buying expensive things, they're coming through the post rather than you going to department stores. And so...
Are they coming in the post?
Yes.
Like, expensive items, we're doing it through couriers, whether it's signed, sealed...
Well, yes, but they're still going to deliver it to somewhere, aren't they? They're going to deliver it to a mailbox wherever you've chosen because you're out at work or whatever, wherever you want them to leave it. And so it depends on what your particular setup is, but sometimes it will be the mail service, which is doing this, sometimes it will be couriers or whoever it is. But the point is that people are intercepting deliveries. They're stealing packages because they think, well, once we've done this, we'll sell it on the black market. We'll chuck it on eBay. We'll try and make ourselves some money. And maybe the big tech companies will just take it on the chin.
I wonder what they were charged with. Is the felony opening someone else's mail or theft or...
So they've been charged with intent to commit fraud.
Okay.
Fictitious checks, so maybe some of the information they were able to grab from the post allowed them to commit identity theft, credit card theft, conspiracy as well. Terry, the man, has also been charged with burglary, as well as credit card theft, identity theft, and so on and so forth. But I think what we're seeing now is people being more inventive with their use of technology to confront criminals, to deal with these sort of situations where you have things taken from you. So the sheriff's office... They've been commending, you know, this victim, saying, you know, really ingenious, your use of technology, you know.
Oh, like you mean the fact that she used an AirTag to prove what was going on, right?
Yeah, they put out their little press release. They say this is, you know, really clever and everything. And also what they really appreciate is that she didn't go round to the address and face them, you know, face to face.
She didn't go in with her guns blazing like Arnie style.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Because if someone's committing criminal acts, which has been alleged here, then there is the potential that they won't take very kindly to you coming up the drive and saying, oi, what are you doing? So instead, she went straight to the police with the information, who actually went and investigated. She left it to the professionals.
And everybody gets good PR.
Everyone gets good PR. The only bad news is for this chap, Terry. He's been hit with a bail bill of $460,000. Huge amount. $500,000 is his bail because it's been suggested he's been up to so much not goodery. Whereas Lara has only been hit with a $50,000 bail bond. But this is the thing, right? AirTags. AirTags... Fantastic for tracking lost items, but they can also sadly be used for tracking living humans as well. And it struck me that if you were stealing post which contained an AirTag, there is a chance that the AirTag will actually give the game away. Because they have built into these things these days a method to actually warn people that they are being stalked, that there is an unknown tracker following them. So if you pick up an AirTag, which is owned by somebody else, and is not paired with your Apple iPhone, your iPhone, mm-hmm. after a while, will give you a little alert saying, oh, it seems to be an AirTag near you. And you might even hear the AirTag begin to beep occasionally as well, which makes it a not great device for tracking someone. So great if you want to stop stalking. Not so good if you want to find something or if you want to track where something which has been stolen from you has gone. Do you see what I mean?
If there's someone with ears and a phone in the vicinity.
Well, who hasn't got a phone? Who these days is going anywhere without a phone?
I'm assuming that's rhetorical. I don't know.
Well, most people are carrying a phone.
I don't think I'm used to our show anymore. I find it all a bit strange. I don't know. I was looking into AirTags for my cat, you see. I thought that would be really useful.
Yeah.
They're huge. They're too huge. And then, you know, she's an indoor-outdoor cat, so she gets caught somewhere. Big AirTag. I don't know. Ugh. Anyway.
Yeah. I don't necessarily think they're great for pets, but people do slip them into, like, the handbags of ex-girlfriends or into people's cars and things if they want to track them.
I know
them
loads of parents that do it to their kids.
Really? Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well,
I'm just thinking, they do have a phone. They're not going to leave that behind. You're going to know already where they are.
The thing is, it can get complicated because if you have someone in your close proximity, like if you have someone riding in your car and they're carrying something that's tagged. So my son, for instance, right, his mum has put an AirTag into his school satchel thing. So if I'm driving him around in the car and his AirTag is not connected to my phone, I get warned that there's an unknown tracker following me. And it's like, yeah, it's my son next to me. And although I can say, stop those annoying warnings for a day from coming up because I don't care about the unknown tracker, there's no way to permanently shut it off. It'd be really nice if there was a way to mark that individual tag as just ignore that one forever. So I don't have to worry about it.
Yeah, totally. Because I could piggyback on your son's AirTag and add another AirTag into your whatever car or whatever.
Yes.
You'd just be getting these warnings going, oh, God.
Or the other scenario is maybe you catch a coach each day or you catch a train each day and there's some random guy who gets on the train at the same time as you and he's got a tag. And so, again, you begin to think that there's someone tracking you, but in fact, it's just a guy in the vicinity. And wouldn't it be handy if you could say, just don't worry about that one? And the other issue with these AirTags is, well, up until very, very recently, this has really been an Apple thing, right? The Apple AirTag is considered like the sort of like the premier tracking device for lost devices and the rest of it. But Androids didn't really work with it. And of course, many, many people have Androids rather than iPhones. But there is, I can tell listeners, there is an Android app which is actually written by Apple and developed by Apple in the Google Play Store called Tracker Detect. So if you want to find out if someone has left an AirTag in your vicinity, you can open Tracker Detect on your Android phone and ask it to scan for trackers, and it will tell you if there's anything nearby which isn't paired with your devices. Now, of course, you've got to prompt it to do that, which is kind of inconvenient compared to how Apple phones just warn you if you're being tracked. And it also doesn't track other kinds of trackers like those ones from Samsung or Tile and others. But the other good news is earlier this year, Apple and Google teamed up to create an industry specification designed cross-platform, cross-industry, to detect unwanted location trackers, making it possible to alert users on both iOS and Android if they're being tracked. They announced this, I think it was in May. It's in the latest versions of iOS, and it's beginning to roll out on Android as well for some users. It's not completely gone global yet.
Question.
Yes.
Does it include apps that might be surreptitiously installed on person's phone?
No, this is purely for sort of like the hardware location trackers. So anything on your phone, that's going to have to be handled by something different. These are for these tags which you might attach to your cat or put inside your suitcase instead. Now, that sort of warning sounds great to me for people who are worried that they may be being stalked. But it's pretty lousy, of course, for people like this woman in Los Alamos who wanted to work out who was stealing her mail. So it swings and roundabouts, this. What you gain in one area, you lose in another. This is the problem. These anti-tracking notifications can inform the thief as well as the person who's being stalked. By the way, my wife says I'm not very good at saying the word thief. She says I've got some sort of speech defect.
Are you trying to say teeth?
Thief. Thief. Apparently I don't say the F on the end of thief. I should say thief, she says, rather than thief. Is it bad? I don't know.
I'm staying out of that for obvious reasons.
Carole, what's your story for us this week?
Okay, so I'm going to set the scene. I'm going to make you, Mr. Cluely, be our protagonist here. But you have to cast your mind back to when you were a single man.
Okay.
One looking for a little romance.
All those weeks ago, yes.
Yeah, perhaps looking for a hot flame to warm your wrinkly cockles. Something like that.
My cockles are...
See, everyone knows that AI didn't write that, Graham. Everyone knows. And what does one do in modern times if one wants to launch the search for passion? You hit the olds, right? You go online dating, don't you?
That is what the young people are doing, isn't it?
That's what you did. You're not that young.
It's what I did. Yeah. Well, I count myself as a young person still.
Really?
Yeah.
So imagine you, Graham, you're on one of these many popular dating apps, whatever. So, you know, Tinder, Bumble, Hinge, OkCupid, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And you meet this attractive woman.
Yes.
And you're like, ooh, she looks interesting. And it's your lucky day because she doesn't swipe left or whatever you do, right? She seems to be into you.
Excellent.
And, I mean, you have to admit, you're, you know, maybe not. I don't know. I don't know how to say this.
No, go ahead. Just say it. Just say what you're thinking.
No, I'm just saying, you thought she was a 9.5 out of 10, right?
Yeah. Okay.
And you would maybe consider yourself a what, do you think?
No, I'm interested in what you think.
Like 7.9?
I think that's very generous.
Okay, so, but she's into you and you're kind of like, so you might be thinking, what's going on here? Like, is this a scam or something? Is this feeling a bit weird?
She's just very deep. Maybe she's seeing my inner beauty. Maybe that's what she's seeing.
So as you're an expert here, so what would you do at this stage, right? Just to make sure, because you're kind of thinking, she's out of my league. So why is she interested in me? So what would you go and check?
I'd probably do a little bit of OSINT, a little bit of open source intelligence. I'd be Googling around, I suppose.
Yeah, reverse image search, maybe.
Yes, exactly. Yep. So we'd look up her image, see if it's actually attached to her name. Maybe we'll look at her LinkedIn profile, something like that. Maybe look up her on social media. Look, see if she's left any reviews on any restaurant websites. I may be able to get an indication of how she expects to be looked after and maintained if she goes to lots of beauty salons or something like that. You know, if she's leaving reviews of all sorts, you know. I would
okay,
go
so
deep.
You're going deep, deep, deep. I'm just thinking more like they haven't asked me for money. Reverse image search reveals nothing's fate, for example, in this situation. She doesn't live abroad. She doesn't have a dangerous job.
Hang on. The image search doesn't find anything at all. I can't find
anything. No, it does.
Oh, okay. So it's not like it's a fake image. That would be a red flag to me, is if there's no one who looks like her out there at all, then I'd think, how many fingers has she got, you know?
Okay, so the lady you found online passes this test of yours.
Excellent.
And she wants to meet you in person. And she's asked you, Graham, to visit, you know, a well-known area in town. So it's not like go down to this dodgy place or it's in public, you know, nice place. So you get there, right? Mr. Cluely, getting there.
I'm feeling very bold if I did that. I'd certainly demand a few games of Scrabble online first before we did anything like that. But all right, so I'm feeling bold. Yeah, I'm feeling brave.
Yeah, you meet her. She's looking as good as she did on the onlines, right?
I'm looking 7 point, if I'm lucky. Yeah.
You suggest the nearby Pizza Express, you know, because you're a class act. But she insists on going to this higher end place.
Okay.
Let's say it's called the Godfather Lounge. Godfather Lounge.
That begins to worry me. Is it called the Godfather Lounge because they've got meatballs stuck inside their inner cheeks and they're talking like Marlon Brando with his cotton wool? Is it some sort of criminal establishment?
Well, interesting you should say that. You tell me. So, you know, you're not like a super wealthy guy. I mean, you're wealthy, but like maybe 7.5, right? On the wealthy scale.
Well, not compared to Jeff Bezos. No, I'm going to be like 0.00001, aren't I?
Okay. So you check the menu. You check the menu at this place, the Godfather Lounge. Okay. Okay, and it's pricier than Pizza Express, but, you know, it's not insane. And you've saved for the situation. And you don't want to come off as cheap because, you know, she's a good 9.8. So you sit down.
Okay.
You sit down. Yeah. You ogle each other because she, you know, she's hot.
Are there tablecloths in this joint?
Yes. Yes. It's the Godfather Lounge.
Oh, sorry. Sorry. Of course it is. Of course there's tablecloths. I imagine they have to wash them every night, clean up all the blood. It's...
She's looking at you, probably fascinated with your ginormous eyebrows, right? And you look at the menu, and it's a bit more than you expected, but it's okay. It's okay.
All
you
right.
order your favorite. You're ordering a cranberry juice on ice,
yes,
right?
Yeah,
and
lovely.
She orders a drink you've never heard of. You know, like, do you know what a Negroni is or a sidecar or a julep?
I know they're all cocktails. I wouldn't know what goes in them.
Exactly. So you have no idea. They're like, okay, fancy, schmancy, whatever. Anywho, you're sitting there sipping your drinks, eyebrow waggling. And she pops off to the loo, right, to check her lippy.
Okay.
And comes back, and Graham, it's drama, drama. She comes back all panicked, saying, sorry, 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 emergency at home. I'm so sorry, I gotta go. And she dashes off.
Leaving me with the bill?
Leaving you with the bill.
Is this a scam? Is it just... Nobody actually goes.
No, it's just a fun story. I thought I'm going to ease myself into smashing security. Fuck the security angle. Just go with some love thing. Yes, there's a scam coming. Good.
Right.
So she dashes off, right? And you're sitting there. And then, of course, you're presented with a bill as you predicted.
Yeah.
And so looking at the menu, you could kind of work out that it'd probably be about whatever. Let's say you were expected to pay like 20, 30 quid. The bill is like 600 quid.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
Have we eaten anything at this stage? Has this just been the drinks?
You just had your cranberry soda, right? And she's ordered a few drinks.
That's quite expensive.
A few shooters, maybe a few shooters. Yeah, it's expensive.
It's quite expensive.
It's quite expensive, right? So what do you do now? So you're in this Godfather Lounge. What do you think happens?
I'm terrified. What do the waiters look like? Are they like, you know, heavies? Have they got cauliflower ears?
You get some staff and bouncers cracking their knuckles, shifting their stance to more imposing.
But wouldn't you leave a bad review on TripAdvisor to the restaurant afterwards, warning? Because I would definitely
would
have
you?
Checked.
Would you?
Yes.
Godfather Lounge.
Well, yeah, but if...
Lounge. Okay, you might.
Oh, you don't think I should? You don't think I should?
No, I was just questioning whether, because I know you are a committed runner, right? You've talked about that in the show before. Would you just try and escape? You know, lightning fast, Clark Kent style-y?
I don't think I'm quite as fast as Clark Kent. No, I'm not. I'm not Superman.
Okay.
I'm not very lithe, to be honest. I'm not sure I'd have to sort of oil myself down in cod liver oil or something like that. You know, just to slip past.
Yeah. What do you think the scam is?
Well, the scam is that she's obviously in cahoots with the restaurant. Her job is attract. Gullible podcast hosts to come on a date and then cough up an inordinate amount of money when she's just run off probably to get the next guy in the door.
Yes. This is called being tabled. And journalist Deepika Bhardwaj took to Twitter to expose the scam just last week. Our journalist accuses this upscale Mumbai club, the Godfather Lounge, and other nearby high-end drink places of being kind of, I guess, grand poobahs of this scam. The girls seem to be responsible for luring in the tables or the victims, the male dates.
Yeah.
And reportedly get 15 to 20% of the total bill as a kickback. So it's like, y'all have 15 drinks, 15 shots. And in some ways, this seems really old school to me, right? Get some hot women to lure men into clubs, then fleece them for all you can. Like it's...
Oh, no, that's never happened before, Carole. It's never happened that a beautiful woman has scammed a gullible, overweight, middle-aged man.
And thanks to this online spotlight, because of this journalist, the authorities are now investigating this club. So typically, I think we think of romance scam victims as being women, don't we, as the prime target, not men. Would you agree with that?
Oh. That's interesting, actually. I wonder what I do think. No, I think I I think it's pretty much even.
Well, I always thought it was more women that were kind of the big prey for this. But it turns out, according to Barclays Bank, published a report in late July, right, a few months ago. And they say, yes, romance scams are definitely on the rise. But 60% of the reports were made from male victims and 40% from women. However, women lose like 2.5 times more money than men do. So men might give you 50 quid and say, go to the movies. Women are like, let me save you forever.
Right, right. And I think there are a lot more men on dating apps than women as well, is the impression I've always had.
Yeah. They also say that 1 in 3 are more open to dating during the summer months. So you guys in the Northern Hemisphere, if you think you need some love in your life, you better get your skates on or your roller skates on. Not winter yet. And if you are doing all this and you want to do your due diligence, check the episode show notes. I'm sharing a few checklists to make sure you're as safe as possible when you're navigating these dangerous dating waters.
It's a great reason, though, isn't it, to say to your date, oh, no, let's go to KFC or Burger King.
I want to make sure you're not scamming me.
Exactly. I'm going to go somewhere really cheap and nasty. Rather than that Swiss restaurant that you fancy.
Okay, but if it's a first date and you're kind of fancying the person and you might do like some smoochy woochies.
On a first date, Kroll?
With KFC breath? Barf.
Does your email security solution fit your alert budget? Relying on built-in controls or traditional blockers will inevitably lead to more noise than your instant response team can handle. Well, Material Security takes a pragmatic approach to email security, stopping new flavors of phishing and pretexting attacks before reaching the user's mailbox, while searching through everyone's mailbox for similar messages in a campaign. What gets surfaced to your team are the highest value cases to investigate, with all the context and reach consolidated into a single view. Remediations are a breeze with Material Security, so go try it out for yourself at smashingsecurity.com/material. That's smashingsecurity.com/material. And thanks to Material Security for supporting the show. Modern threat actors have weaponized cloud automation to accelerate, taking only 10 minutes to fully execute an attack in the cloud. As organizations continue to shift into larger and more complex cloud estates, legacy detection and response frameworks are no longer sufficient at stopping cloud attacks. Well, Sysdig delivers fast and effective multi-cloud detection and response, or CDR, capabilities to empower analysts against these accelerated and complex cloud threats. Powered by Falco, analysts gain the visibility, context, and real-time security capabilities traditional EDR and on-prem tooling fail to deliver. Learn more about how to stop advanced attacks at cloud speed. Visit smashingsecurity.com/sysdig for more information. That's smashingsecurity.com/SYSDIG. And thanks to Sysdig for supporting the show. Quick question. Do your end users always, and I mean always without exception, work on company-owned devices and IT-approved apps? I didn't think so. So my next question is, how do you keep your company's data safe when it's sitting on all of those unmanaged apps and devices? Well, 1Password has an answer to this question, and it's called Extended Access Management. 1Password Extended Access Management helps you secure every sign-in for every app on every device, because it solves the problems traditional IAM and MDM can't touch. Go and check it out for yourself at 1Password.com/smashing. That's 1Password.com/smashing. And thanks to the folks at 1Password for supporting the show. And welcome back. And you join us at our favourite part of the show, the part of the show that we like to call Pick of the Week.
Pick of the Week.
Pick of the Week. Pick of the Week is the part of the show where everyone chooses something they like. Could be a funny story, a book that they've read, a TV show, a movie, a record, a podcast, a website, or an app. Whatever they wish. It doesn't have to be security related necessarily.
Better not be.
Well, my pick of the week this week is a bit of a nitpick, actually. So my wife's been watching a show on Amazon Prime. I'm sure you've heard of it, Carole, called The Boys. Yeah, you seen The Boys?
I don't like it. I'm not a big fan.
Well,
like
you know
it.
What? I've got a bit. I enjoy elements of it, but sometimes it goes a bit over the top, doesn't it? It's very gory, and it's also kind of pervy. It's also a bit. I find it a little bit. Maybe I'm just too old for it.
Yeah, it's just not my thing at all. I'm not into the Marvel stuff, though. I'm not into any of the superhero stuff.
Well, it's got a bit of a twist on the regular superhero thing, because the central premise is that there's this corporation which basically owns all the superheroes and they're adored by the public. But in reality, the superheroes are really dreadful human beings. And I like that bit of it. But there's something else which, other than the sex and, you know, the over-the-top gore, which really pulls me out of the drama. And that is one of the actors. So there's an actor in it, Carl Urban. You may remember him. He played Bones in the Star Trek movies, the modern Star Trek movies. Mm. Probably aren't that modern anymore. And he plays a character called Billy Butcher in The Boys.
The guy with the beard.
That's right. Yep.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's known as Monsieur Charcuterie by the character Frenchie.
He's Riker. He's Riker from Star Trek.
No, that's Jonathan Frakes is Riker.
I'm not mixing up the actors. I'm saying he's playing that kind of character, don't you think? The big kind of beardy.
Wait, they've both got big beards. Yes. Basically. Is that what you're saying?
Character. I like the hirsute gentleman, so,
right.
You know.
Yes, okay. Yeah. All right, yes. So, anyway, the issue I've got with Carl Urban playing this character of Billy Butcher is that his accent is nothing I've ever heard before.
It's the worst.
It's terrible. I was watching it and I thought, is he American? Is he meant to be British? Or is he Australian? And I actually had to search on the internet to find out what this character was supposed to be, because I couldn't work out what on earth accent is that meant to be. And apparently he's speaking with a Cockney accent, according to the internet, from the East End of London.
Yeah, just, I know. My husband watches it occasionally. The accent is terrible.
It is terrible.
Terrible, terrible.
Just so listeners at home can appreciate this, I'm going to play you a little bit of audio.
Oh, there he is. You were spot on about him. There I was, filling up the motor. I turn around, the little git had done a runner.
There he was, filling up the motor. It's even bad by Guy Ritchie standards. I've never heard a Cockney accent like this ever before in my life. And for that reason, this accent and the fact that it's completely making it impossible to watch this show if it weren't even for the sex and the gore as well. That is my nitpick of the week.
Whoa. Okay.
Carole, what's your pick of the week?
I'm chilling out with a family member the other day, right? And I can see something in like her hair, kind of like around her eyes or whatever. And they're like these little wee nodes in front of her ears.
What do you mean wee nodes?
I don't know. So I'm like, what is that? And she's like, oh, I'm listening to classical music while we chat. And I'm thinking, whoa, rude, right?
But background music.
I guess, but I'm like, I can't hear anything. And these things are not going into her ear holes. These were bone conduction headphones. So I was like, oh my God, I'm so excited. I've been wanting to try these. Let me try. They are amazing. So the product I tried is by a company called Shokz, Shokz, because we're street. And they are like Bluetooth enabled headphones that are connected with like a thinnish tube at the base of your neck. And then the headphones curve around the back of your ear, like basically like a reverse pair of glasses. And they come and the node sits right in front of your little ear hole, that wee bone on the side of your face. Like, and typically sound vibration travels through the air down the ear canal, causing your eardrum to vibrate. We all know that. But using bone conduction, the sound waves bypass your eardrum and they head directly to the cochlear, aka the inner ear. And Beethoven's the one who discovered this because he had hearing loss as he grew older. And apparently
Beethoven had a pair of these.
Not a pair of Shokz, but he used a conducting baton between his teeth as he played the piano. And the baton allowed the sound vibrations made by the piano to travel through to his inner ear so he could still hear the notes.
Oh, don't you love Beethoven?
Well, I just love that story.
Yeah.
So why do I love these? Now, there are other brands. These are the only ones I've tried. They are fab if you don't want to be isolated in an environment. Like, say you're driving or you're running or you're biking or hanging out chatting to boring people like me.
So that's why I was going to ask. So unlike headphones, which sort of take your attention and isolate you a little bit, so these are just kind of giving you background music and you just...
Yeah, they're fab if you want to protect your ears from noise damage.
Right.
And they're fab if you have hearing loss.
Hmm.
Now, the ones I tried, I think it was an earlier model, or maybe there's lots of different types. They all have different things. The one I had no microphone, right? So, and I think I bought them for like, I don't know, about $100, $150, something like that. I bought them for a friend, but I don't want them for me because I really need a mic if I'm going to be using these.
What do you need a mic for? What, do they link up to your phone as well?
Yeah, it's all Bluetooth, right? So you can then...
Oh, I see. Okay. So then you...
So then if I'm like listening to whatever, and then you call me to go, crawl, let's talk about the show, I can ignore it. But I can just transfer over and I can talk with you and I'll have to hold my phone microphone to my face.
So would you prefer to have these than those? I don't know if you have a pair of AirPods at the moment, or don't you? Or you would rather have this?
Mm-hmm, because I keep losing one AirPod. I don't know. Don't ask me why. It's ridiculous. But at least these are connected as one. So they're Bluetooth. They're wireless, but they sit around your neck. So it's like a one piece affair, which I much prefer over the iPods.
Mm-hmm.
I like not having my ears isolated. Anyway, this sounds cool. Check them out. I'm pretty amazed by them. They're called Shox, S-H-O-K-Z. I saw them in Best Buy. I was able to try them out there. Quite fun. So there you go. There's my pick of the week.
How long do the batteries last?
Different levels, it seems, for different buys. But there's a brand new pair coming out like imminently from what I saw today. And I think I saw 12-hour battery life.
Oh, okay. So you could charge them every couple of days, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And how much do these kind of things cost? Is this like hundreds of dollars or is
no,
it?
No,
like-
I think the lower end ones maybe are about 100, 150. And then the higher end ones maybe up to 300, but no more than that. I think I saw the brand new ones in the UK for £170 when I was looking online today.
Okay.
Very cool, though, Cluj. Try them. I think you'd be really impressed.
Do you think? I don't know. I'm thinking, would it be bad for their image if I started wearing them and using them?
Now, we have an interview.
Yes, we do.
Yes. Chatted with Maya Levine. She knows everything cloud. She's from Sysdig. And she talks about the complexities and the differences of securing the cloud. Check it out. So listeners, today we welcome Maya Levine, a product manager at Sysdig, the company on a mission to make every cloud deployment secure and reliable. Maya, thank you so much for being here on Smashing Security. It's an honor to chat with you today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, we want to learn about you. So maybe first, you can tell us a bit about you and how you ended up in your current role as product manager at Sysdig.
Sure. So I studied computer science at university. And out of university, I took a role as a security engineer at a different cybersecurity company called Checkpoint. I moved into technical marketing engineering and then eventually into product management here at Sysdig. So it's been a journey all around, but in cybersecurity and a big focus is cloud security for me.
What's the best thing about being a product manager?
I think it's just working with people. You have to really kind of communicate and be at the center of so many teams. So you really get to establish relationships with different people.
Yeah, right across departments. Most people are kind of stuck in their fishbowl, but you're going across everywhere. That's okay. So the cloud, that's your thing. I remember when that term was brand new. And today, I think everyone uses it, right? Everything makes use of it. And it's still growing all the time. Like, is it different from a traditional environment or are there big differences?
There are definitely big differences. And with the shift of going to cloud, which now almost everybody is at least has some kind of cloud presence, I think we also as a industry need to be shifting our mindset about the security. The old secure the perimeter mindset is not really as relevant for the cloud, where everything is so interconnected and you have all of these different services and applications that are all talking to each other. in different ways.
Like the cloud is complicated, right? And we often try, when things are complicated, to provide a kind of simple interface to allow people, you know, to get over that hump. But do you think that actually people think it's much simpler than it actually is, like in terms of an environment? Because you're right, it talks to everything, right? There's so many different passwords and different identities that can get in and out of it.
I mean, I don't know many people who think of it as simple. It's easy to deploy things, right? The speed is there.
Yeah.
The automation is there. And that's a huge benefit of the cloud. It allows us to build applications in a really quick and resilient way. But the con of that is that, you know, you have all of these things that are happening and maybe deploying and maybe running that you don't even know about.
Yeah, totally. So maybe you can tell us a bit about like the types of attacks you typically see. Like how do bad actors typically get into a cloud resource of some sort?
Sure. Before I talk about kind of the techniques, I will say that one major difference and major challenge of being in the cloud is that we're seeing that the average cloud attack takes about 10 minutes to execute start to finish. So, you know, often attacks start with some kind of compromised credentials or identities or secrets or keys. I love the metaphor of attackers are looking for the keys under the mats.
Mm-hmm.
In the cloud, people are leaving their keys all sorts of places, in exposed text that they're uploading to GitHub, in, you know, serverless code files and infrastructure as code file templates and all of these places that seem a little bit obscure. Maybe you don't think about, but attackers actually know to look for them there. So typically, that's how they start, is they get some kind of access. Once they're in your cloud environment, then they start what we call enumeration or reconnaissance. It's basically, what can I access with the current credentials I have? What other credentials can I get access to? They're trying to spread like a virus. They're trying to get as far as they can, as deep as they can into your cloud assets. And then, you know, usually the motivation is financial. So they'll execute crypto mining or ransomware or data exfiltration that they'll sell on the dark web, whatever it is. There's usually a financial motivation behind kind of their end goal there.
Security has been around for a long time. Does this environment require us to think about security differently than we would have in a traditional kind of, I don't know, network server environment?
Yeah, because cloud attacks are so fast, right? Within 10 minutes, that means that our ability to detect and respond to attacks also need to be quick. And so there's two real elements of security that everybody needs to think about. There's the prevention part of it, which how can I, you know, configure my environments in a strong way to prevent anybody from being able to get in the first place? And then there's the detection part of it, which is the harsh reality is you can't prevent everything, right? There's new methods that attackers come up with all the time. There's vulnerabilities that haven't even been disclosed yet. There's the concept of zero-day attacks, which is, you know, things that we don't necessarily know about. So we do actually need the ability to detect when things are happening that are malicious and that are suspicious in the cloud very quickly. Like within 5 seconds, you really need to be alerted of something happening so that you can take maybe 5 minutes to correlate and then 5 minutes to initiate some kind of response. The truth is that we need to defend at the same speed that they are attacking. So that gives us about 10 minutes, right, that we need to be able to respond.
And if you act that fast, I mean, you could basically save like your customers' data being taken or a huge bill on ransomware or prevent, you know, not giving away to the ransomware and having the data just be leaked somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, there's all sorts of things that you could probably prevent and contain and stop kind of the spread of these attackers within your environments. The point here is that if you're being alerted an hour later, even 15 minutes after something happened, that's almost too late to be able to actually stop and make a difference. And I don't want to pretend like being able to respond this quickly is easy, right? But we do need to kind of take advantage of automation in the cloud, just like attackers are taking advantage of it for their attacking purposes. So where possible, try to do automated response actions, make sure that you get all of the data and deliver it to the right people if you do need manual actions happening. But basically the speed at which you need to be notified about something wrong and be able to respond to it, that's going to be a huge challenge for people in the cloud.
So you're a product manager at Sysdig and an expert in cloud. So tell us, how does Sysdig approach this that you think is really cool and that you think listeners really need to know about?
The actual live real-time detection piece. Right. Being able to know about something actually in real time and having that information be pushed to whatever the systems are that you use. That's key. That's a big part of it. I also think that we're doing interesting things around correlation. So a lot of attacks, you know, are taking advantage of mismanaged identities or secrets or that kind of stuff. And if you're following a user's actions, you can often see, really paint the picture of what the attacker did, right? If they logged in or managed to get credentials of a specific user and then use that user to execute all of these things, being able to put that all together and kind of show you in consequential order, these are the actions that were taken, really helps incident responders be able to understand what happened, what other resources they maybe need to look at, what's the scope of this attack.
You know, I imagine there's a lot of guys and gals listening to this going, oh God, if only I could convince my C-levels to understand how important this is and to give me the budget, you know, and the resources to make this happen. What advice would you have for them in that instance?
There are many, many documented cases in the past few years of companies who had to pay millions and millions of dollars daily in fees. I mean, I can think of MGM Grand a couple years ago, right there. They had an attack that happened, which brought down so many of their systems. And I think it was over $8 million in damages per day for them.
It's so massive.
If you're comparing numbers, right? I don't love saying coming at it with the fear factor, but the truth is that if you're not investing in security, you might end up having to pay much more in damages. But it's a complex thing, and I would say not just investing in tools is important, but also investing in your people. And the complexity of environments that we're asking people to understand just keeps increasing, right? And so really getting the time to train and learn and understand all of the intricacies of different environments can help. I mean, I can think of an attack recently that the Sysdig threat research team discovered where they did everything right. They had a policy in place to not allow users to create new access keys. But one of the parts of the policy was case sensitive. So they ended up, they wrote the right policy. They just had a lowercase a instead of an uppercase a. And so the attacker was able to use the user anyway. So that's just an example that I can think of where even when you're trying to do the right things and you're putting these security things in place, there's all this level of detail that you really need to get into to be able to actually have the prevention in place. And that's why I emphasize you can't always prevent everything. The good news is that on the detection side, often attackers are doing the same kinds of actions, right? They're following kind of the same playbooks. So we know what to look for, basically.
If someone was listening right now and they're going, oh, Sysdig sounds pretty good, but I bet it's really hard, like just to get it on board, you know, get it infiltrated into our system so that we can actually, you know, get some return from it. What would you say to them?
I would say that's, we have many different types of, you know, onboarding connections that you can do to integrate security into your systems. You know, we have an agent that you can deploy, but we also have an agentless connection method. So It's pretty easy to test out. And no matter what security vendor that you have, I just wanted to really emphasize how important it is to be thinking about security in the cloud as its own beast, as its own different thing. It is not the same as your on-premise environment. We've seen many threat actors be able to move laterally from your cloud systems onto your on-premise servers. Yes.
Yeah. Scary stuff. Totally. I have to say, I have to commend you because I was taking a look around your site, the Sysdig site, and you are very, I think, generous, both in the amount of information you share about how to better protect yourself, both in your blog and other places on the site. And I thought that was really good. You know, like listeners who are listening to this thinking they're interesting, they can actually just go there and read up, right? And that's, was that a conscious decision on your end to kind of share so much? Because it's unusual, you know, to have actual information rather than marketing spiel.
This is an industry where we can help each other. We are stronger if we are supporting each other. Nobody should be shamed for undergoing a breach, right? We can all learn from what was the thing that tripped you up? What was the thing that allowed the attackers to kind of take control of your systems. And I'm very proud of Sysdig's threat research team, which discovers new attacks all the time and always kind of shares that information. We had one recently where attackers were targeting people's AI models in the cloud. And we called it LLM jacking. Basically, what they did was they managed to get into cloud environments through credentials and stuff. And then once they were there, they're targeting these LLM models that were hosted by cloud providers, things like Anthropic's Claude. And then they would sell access to these compromised LLMs and leave the cloud account owner to foot the bill for that. That's new, right? That's using new technologies. But sharing this kind of thing, I think, is critical for the industry as a whole so we can all learn from it.
Power in numbers. I agree. Maya, this has been such a fascinating conversation. Is there anything you want to add before we wrap up?
The last thing I'll just say is that almost every single breach involved some kind of insecure identity or secret or key. I would urge people, again, to invest in security, invest in real-time detection, and invest in actually narrowing down the amount of permissions that you give the people in your companies. So if those credentials get leaked somehow, that the impact is not going to be as high.
Brilliant advice. I couldn't agree more. Listeners, you can learn how to stop advanced attacks at cloud speed, Sysdig style, by visiting sysdig.com/smashing. That's sysdig.com/smashing. And this was Maya Levine, product manager at Sysdig. Thank you so much, Maya, for taking the time to speak with us today.
Thank you for having me.
Super stuff. And that just about wraps up the show for this week. You can follow us on Twitter at Smash Insecurity. No G, Twitter wouldn't allow us to have a G. And don't forget, to ensure you never miss another episode, follow Smash Insecurity in your favorite podcast app, such as Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Pocket Casts.
And huge thank you to our episode sponsors, Material, Sysdig, and 1Password. And of course, to our wonderful Patreon community. It's thanks to them all that the show is free. For episode show notes, sponsorship info, guest list, and the entire back catalog of more than 382 episodes, check out smashingsecurity.com.
Until next time, cheerio, bye-bye.
Bye.